All right, biohackers, who doesn't love a yummy, creamy whey protein shake? Oh, it is such a treat. And I really love it as a meal replacement, post-workout recovery, maybe even a midday snack. So this is why I have to tell you about Puree protein powder. I absolutely love the bourbon vanilla flavor and the chocolate, but I think I got to go with the vanilla as my favorite. So it's smooth, it's delicious, and you know what else? It's pretty awesome that the flavors come from real natural ingredients like the bourbon vanilla seeds from Madagascar. And let's talk about quality because there's a lot of junk whey protein on the market that I would not recommend. So the Puree whey protein, it comes from pasture-raised cow's milk with no hormones, no GMOs, and no pesticides. This is because Puree's mission has always been to be the best at offering pure, clean, and superior products that support health and well-being. And what I think truly sets them apart is that they are fully transparent with their product testing. Every batch is third-party tested against more than 200 contaminants and certified clean by the Clean Label Projects. Not all brands can say this. Plus, each product contains a QR code so you can personally scan it and review the test results at home. I know you're excited to try it out. So what you're going to do is head on over to puree.com/biohackerbabes. That's puri.com/biohackerbabes. And then make sure you use promo code biohackerbabes at checkout to save 20%. All right, let's get back to the show.
Because alcohol is hyper dysfunctional. It can be really fun, but just as a drug, which is what it is, it's pretty destructive for a very large percentage of people who consume it regularly.
Hey there, welcome to the Biohacker Babes podcast. We are your hosts. I'm Renee, a certified nutritional consultant with a master's degree in nutrition.
What's up? And I'm Lauren, functional diagnostic nutrition practitioner and Czech movement specialist. We're sisters and we're joining forces to empower you to become your own biohacker and upgrade your life.
Our mission is to provide actionable steps so you can optimize your health, strengthen your intuition, and support your body's natural healing abilities. Because life is too short to not feel your best every single day.
Thank you for joining us and welcome to the show.
Hello and welcome to episode 240 of the Biohacker Babes. My name is Lauren. I am tuning in today from Austin, Texas, joined not all the way across the country, like halfway across the country, by my sister and co-host Renee Bells in Las Vegas. What's up, Renee?
Hey, hey. Yeah, not too far away.
Yeah, I'm a little bit closer. Yeah.
I'm waving to you out my window. Can you see me?
Hello. 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 Yeah, in Austin. We haven't had a ton of sun here. It's been a little gray the whole time. You have sun in Vegas?
We've had a lot of rain and cold. I'm like, I feel so bad for the spring breakers in Vegas because it is not quite pool season like they maybe expected it to be.
Oh gosh. Yeah. Happy spring. Happy spring. Been just like so ready for sunshine and warm because I don't know about you and everyone listening, but my mood is just not as optimal as it could be. I'm like not reaching true potential for mood and mental health when the weather's not amazing. So, excited to talk about a good mood booster today on the podcast. We got Justin Wolf of New Brew coming on to talk. We got a few different topics going on, but we did really want to zero in on mental health. We're always fascinated by this topic, especially when people have created really creative solutions around their own challenges and healing. So we're talking about New Brew. You've heard about New Brew through the podcast before. It is a non-alcoholic beverage alternative. And the key ingredients are kava and kratom leaf or kratom leaf. Oh my gosh, I got to practice saying that. It's so hard for me. Kratom leaf, which is actually still not even the correct pronunciation. We'll learn a little bit more in the podcast with Justin. But such a pleasure to have such an amazing solution to alcohol. We know how neuroinflammatory, neurotoxic it is. And even though we enjoy a beverage from time to time, it is time to shift this landscape around socializing and alcohol. Don't you think, Renee?
Oh yeah. I'm definitely on board. And this drink, I mean, why we wanted to bring this podcast to you all is because this drink has been a game changer for me. like I'm drinking one of these instead of alcohol, and like maybe on my way out to meet friends or if people are here socializing, and I feel amazing. My brain is working much better. I remember all the conversations crystal clear, and then I sleep great. So my, and like, I haven't really had any alcohol in I guess over a month now. And I've been just drinking these a little bit, and all my readiness scores are amazing, like every day from doing that. So yeah, I think it's just a great alternative.
It's a win.
Yeah. And I love also that he really is pushing the education. Like he is not coming on to say, hey, everyone should drink New Brew. He's like, hey, learn about Kratom, learn about Kava, test it out. How do you feel? How do you feel about your relationship with alcohol? Do you need to look at that? Just really like eye-opening and some good questions to ask yourself and do the research. Look at the website, drinknewbrew.com. They have tons of research on there. And yeah, I'm just really excited to finally have something else. And actually, I have a bar down the street that is a Kava Kratom bar. And so Ryan and I have been going there lately, and sometimes they have live music and they'll have a food truck. I'm like, finally a place to socialize where there's no alcohol. Mm-hmm. It's awesome.
Oh, so nice. It's so nice. And I love, I'm like, oh, we can have a little mind state shift and still get good Aura Ring scores. That's the goal. So good.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think we got like a little bit of a therapy session in this podcast. I think it's definitely going to get your gears going and then like a really cool solution. So stay tuned till the end to find out how you can find New Brew near you. It's becoming more and more accessible. And of course, you can get it online. You can scroll down in the show notes to find our discount code.
I think Biohacker Babes.
Thank you for that. Biohacker Babes. You can always just enter Biohacker Babes and you'll probably get some dollars shaved off. But let's share a little bit more about New Brew and Justin. So Justin Wolf started New Brew after being frustrated by all the non-alc and functional beverage options that didn't live up to their claims. While traveling in Mexico, he experienced the transformative benefits of Kava Root and Kratom Leaf and set out with his two brothers to create a ready-to-drink beverage for California sober and health-conscious individuals like him. Before starting New Brew, Justin spent 5 years leading global partnerships at Google and launched Drip Drop, an electrolyte powder hydration supplement that is now sold at pharmacies across the U.S. Throughout his career, Justin has been an early investor and advisor in the psychedelic medicine space. Now, along with his two brothers, Justin is on a mission to give consumers better alternatives to alcohol and educate people about the transformative benefits of plants. Okay, let's get into a little plant magic. Are we ready?
Yeah, let's do it.
Welcome, Justin, to the Biohacker Babes. Thanks for joining us this morning. We got some morning action going on.
Yeah, a little new for some of us. But yeah, thank you for having me on, Lauren and Renee. Been excited about this since we first connected a few months back. So appreciate you having me on.
Likewise, we're so excited to chat with you. And yeah, we got two Pacific coasters. So thank you both for joining me this morning. Really excited to dive into this topic around some non-alcoholic options. I think the Sober Curious movement has just completely taken off at all-time high, and it doesn't seem to be a passing trend, hopefully. And it's just so interesting to watch this shift that's happening and how younger generations are thinking about socializing and using alcohol. Now, like, you walk into grocery stores and there's like a whole wall of non-alcoholic alternatives, which is just so exciting for us. And you've created an amazing product called New Brew, but we would love to drop in and hear about your personal story and how you came into this space and what your relationship has been to alcohol and kind of your why. So anywhere you want to jump in, we're just really excited to hear your story.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I can kind of start with the, you know, my journey into alcohol and then away from alcohol. I started drinking at a really young age. I actually grew up in a family that made wine up in the Bay Area, Napa Valley, at a very small scale, not like a commercial winery, but like more of a hobby type thing. And so I was around wine and alcohol from like a very, very young age. And I think it just sort of piqued my interest. Like, even when I was like 5-10 years old, I was really interested in how it would change adults' behavior, right? That sort of drew me in. And it didn't take long. I think I was maybe 12 or 13 when my friends started getting into a little bit of beer, wine, whatever. And I sort of, I think that's a little bit young, obviously. Over the high school and college years, I developed sort of an identity that was really had alcohol really deeply ingrained in it, right? I developed sort of a party guy identity, if you will. And I think what was really happening in the background was that I was dealing with a set of mental health issues at that young age, chiefly some form of depression, which I later sort of uncovered to be a treatment-resistant form of depression. And of course, I didn't know what to call it at the time or anything, but I was, in a way, even at a really young age, I think self-medicating. Again, I didn't know that at the time, but I was very confused and upset by certain things that were happening in my life. And I was drinking not only to party, but also to get away from things or to numb certain emotions. And that became the norm for me. It just sort of continued on and on into early adulthood. And, by the time I was in my late 20s and I fell in love and got married, it had gotten to the point where the consequences of my drinking were not really they were starting to outweigh the benefits, whatever benefits I was getting out of it. And I started to open my eyes to the fact that I was solving for some issue and really self-medicating rather than just trying to have a good time, which is what I always wanted to call it. And it was really when I started to see clearly that the pain I had been feeling all these years and kind of repressing myself was so clearly to be found in the face of my wife. That's when it became impossible to ignore. And I realized I had a drinking problem, right? I was an alcoholic. A big part of the journey to opening my eyes and reframing my perspective on my relationship to alcohol, I achieved through psychedelic therapy. I had been, since I was 12 years old, in some form of therapy. I, at a very young age, got onto antidepressants. So I was kind of pushed to the tools that the American healthcare system will offer you if you say that you're depressed, for example. None of those ever worked for me, even a little bit. I think they might have, even exacerbated my problem in some respects. And it was very difficult to get on and off of different SSRIs. And it wasn't until I really explored ketamine-assisted therapy and later work with psilocybin and ayahuasca. That's when I really broke things open and was able to reframe my thinking on myself, my relationship to the people around me, to the world, and to alcohol, and to see what was very obvious, I think, to a lot of people who knew me already, which is that I had a serious problem and that I was destroying myself and I was on a really bad path. So yeah, that's a long-winded answer, but that's how I arrived at the moment. About 3 years ago, I was 31 years old when I decided to leave alcohol behind entirely, and I did so. And that in many ways is just sort of the genesis of New Brew, of the company we have here.
It's a brave step forward.
Yeah. Thank you for sharing that. I think you're not alone. There's so many people still dealing with that, really in the thick of it. So I think it takes a lot of courage to do what you do, to just say, this is a problem and I got to make some changes. And I think there's not a lot of great answers out there for people too until now. You have things like New Brew, psychedelics, I think, are really big. And I used to use alcohol because I had social anxiety. And I think a lot of people do that, right? It's kind of like this numbing agent. It makes you a little bit more of an extrovert. For someone that's an introvert, you want to be the extrovert. You want to be the fun person at the party, and you use alcohol in that way. And over time, I've realized that's not the best way to do that. And I've changed my relationship with alcohol as well. So I just want to say, Juan, thank you for sharing that. And I'm curious, with your journey, did you just one day say, that's it, I'm completely cutting it out? Or did you ever consider moderation?
Yeah, no, there were many steps before I came to that point. Yeah, I can shine a little more light on that. I think it was maybe 3 or 4 years before I actually quit drinking that I started to take these kind of like half measures, right? And really a desperate attempt to not have to quit. I was willing to try anything that meant, okay, I can kind of push off what I know in my subconscious is inevitable, which is that I'm going to have to face this. Yeah, it was like 3 or 4 years before I quit drinking, I gave up hard liquor. It's like, all right, that's the problem, is that, you know, at that point in the night, I moved from beer to taking like a couple shots of tequila or whatever it might be. And that's when my behavior really turns and I sort of become this other person. So if I just cut out the hard liquor, I'm going to be good to go. And I did that. I think it was good maybe for like a short period of time. And then I just started drinking a little more beer, a little more wine, a little more of this. And then I would be having like 10 or 15 beers in a night eventually and getting just as drunk as I was before. So, all right, that didn't work. I worked with, I think it was a psychiatrist or some sort of addiction specialist a couple of years after that, and got on a medication called naltrexone, which is, I don't know if you're familiar with it, but it's a medication you take every day. Yeah, it kind of like curbs the positive feedback response you get from alcohol. So after you have like one drink, the second one just doesn't feel all that good, and you just sort of lose interest in drinking. So I started taking that medication, but then on a night that I was really excited about, maybe I would take half of it. You know, I started to just justify maybe taking a day off of it or whatever. And I was doing the same thing that a lot of people who are, you know, a lot of addicts will do, right? I was like justifying in my own mind and trying to get around things. And so, yeah, that was a failure as well. It ended up the same way. And really, you know, I talk a lot about the journey with psychedelics and how that helped open up my mind. Even after all of that, it was still, I was still trying to hold on. And it was my wife who really gave me an ultimatum at the end of the day to like force my hand on the issue. It's, you know, she was prepared to leave if I didn't quit drinking. And that's, I'll always say, the greatest gift that anyone's ever given me in my whole life, is her telling me that, because that was an easy decision. That, you know, my love for her was the one thing that I knew I could not abandon no matter what. It came way before alcohol. And I didn't have enough love for myself to put my self-love ahead of alcohol all those years, right? Because it was so obvious I was hurting myself. It had to be my love for her. So anyway, that's really how it happened at the end of the day. But I think all of those things kind of had to happen in the sequence that they did for it to even be possible. Like I truly, like I did not, for many, many years, I thought it was like laughable, the idea of me not drinking. It was that big a part of my life. So, you know, there's all that led up to it. And then to be honest with you, I think there's a long process of undoing now that, even 3 years later, like I feel really solid in alcohol-free living now. I really do. But there's still like, I don't know, there's still remnants of it in some way. You know, I'm still picking up the pieces in some respects or learning new things about myself that I just wasn't able to learn before. It's like relearning life from scratch. It felt like being an infant almost in certain aspects of life after I quit drinking. So yeah, it's exciting, but kind of nerve-wracking making that kind of decision.
Yeah, a whole new world, like a whole new alive world, like feeling so much. And I can imagine it's a lot of work. And that clarity around the self-love is just so revealing and interesting because, yeah, when we're kind of self-medicating, it's like, that's such a Band-Aid, right? It's not alcohol that's the problem. It's if we peel back the layers, what's really going on underneath? And I think a lot of people are not willing to go there. And I think the first step, and I would love to hear you agree, but it's just that awareness that whatever the deeper issue is, we have to acknowledge what the surface problem is. I'm curious because you labeled yourself as an alcoholic. And I know there's kind of debate, and maybe people that are alcoholics have a hard time with this, but like, what is it? How do you qualify yourself as an alcoholic? Because some people would say you're only an alcoholic if you wake up and you start drinking. Like, there's no other kind of qualification, but there's a lot of nuances here. Like, what are maybe some signs that it really is masking an issue or getting in the way of you being your optimal self that are not just waking up and doing it?
Totally. I'm really glad you asked that. That's a really important question and something I've thought a lot about, because I've always struggled to identify as an alcoholic, even to this day. Like, it feels weird to say it to you. I think that I use that term because it holds meaning for people and it helps like make this my story easier to understand for some people. But the truth is, that's just a label, right? I don't think that alcoholism means that you wake up and drink first thing in the morning. To me, the terms alcoholic or problem drinker or, alcohol use disorder, whatever, there's all these different terms, right? They're kind of interchangeable and they apply better to some people's situation than others. But to me, it boils down to this, like, is this person facing serious consequences as a result of their drinking and yet choosing to continue doing it anyway? And that's, that's what I fit into very cleanly, right? Like, I was at a young age, like, getting in trouble with the law. I was harming my relationships. I was like skipping school. The problems like piled up and up and up, and I was able to just like somehow justify continuing to drink. For me, it was always a behavioral thing. Like, I don't think I was still young. I still am young. I wasn't noticing like major effects to my health due to the way I used alcohol. I never drank in the morning. I never drank alone, frankly. I never drank when I was upset. Drinking was always like something fun for me. And that was another way I was able to kind of convince myself that I didn't have a problem all those years, because I had that sort of stereotypical image of an alcoholic in my head. Like, when I'm pissed off, I don't reach for a bottle. When everyone leaves, I don't have like some private stash that I go to. Like, I hate drinking alone. What's the point? Like, for me, it's a social thing. So I was like, all right, I'm good. Right. But no, like, it was still just as big of a problem. It was just my own fucked up brand of that problem. Right. Like, so it's in some ways it can be really unhelpful to compare yourself to that sort of like commonly understood alcoholic. You know, I would say something similar about Alcoholics Anonymous, about AA. Like, that can be a beautiful thing for a lot of people. It's helped, I mean, God knows how many people saved how many lives, but that is also one way of doing things, right? So a lot of people who are struggling with some kind of drinking problem, I think, will show up to an AA meeting as if like this is the test of whether I actually have a problem. And they don't identify with the stories that they're hearing or the people that they're seeing. And they never come back, right? And they never like really become aware of any alternative, you know, communities or methods to heal themselves. So yeah, it's something that it's really tricky to talk about. It's even trickier to talk about for me as somebody who's like, you know, the CEO of a non-alcoholic sort of alcohol alternative or adjacent product, right? Because we're selling a product that is really helpful for someone like me, who's moved away from alcohol, who wants this alternative, who's okay with still shifting their consciousness a little bit using like other plant medicines. But for someone who's in hardcore substance abuse recovery, it may be a really bad idea to consume our drink. So it's important to like understand the nuances of all this, and for everyone who to figure things out for themselves, to get really curious about their own chemistry, their own relationship to things, and to listen to people's stories, but not buy into any one path or the other. You have to figure it out yourself.
Yeah. And I imagine so having personal. The support system to get the feedback, because the consequences you mentioned, I assume, are quite subjective, right? Like, we usually, people outside of us see the problem before we see it. As you mentioned, you would justify it, right? So,
yeah. Yeah, definitely. Listen to people, take them seriously, but don't take anyone's word as gospel, right? Like, you do know yourself better than anyone. And it's important to get like a variety of opinions from people who are around you. That's what helps me a lot, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I can actually relate to what you said about the AA meetings. This is 20 years ago when I was like, okay, maybe I have a problem with alcohol. And I went, and I remember it like it was yesterday. I remember listening to the stories of the people around me, and I was like, oh no, these people have a problem. I clearly don't have a problem. I'm not doing the things they're doing. And you're right. I left and I never went back. And I think about James Swanick. I don't know if he termed or created this or founded it, but I always think of what he says is, you don't have to be an alcoholic to have a problem with alcohol. It's like, if it's impacting your job, your sleep, your relationship, if it's impacting anything, it's something you should look at. So I appreciate that there's like a little bit of that gray area.
Totally.
And, I want to hear your opinion on like the social connection side of things, because I think a lot of people, they want to drink because they feel like they connect more with others. They're maybe a little bit more open about things. And I used to believe that. But now I have learned I have more meaningful and deeper conversations with people when I'm sober. And I remember the conversations much clearer the next day versus when I'm drinking. It's like very superficial kind of stuff. Not that it's not fun. It could be fun. But then the next day you're like, what did we really talk about? So what is your thought on like the difference? And maybe, and we can segue into the other plant medicines and how like that's a real connection with other people versus alcohol, not so much.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I would say that, like, I'll first admit that, like, my own opinion is colored by my own experience, of course, with alcohol, and I'm not someone who drinks alcohol anymore. But the way I see it, like, alcohol is in some ways a super effective social lubricant, right? Like, it will get people talking. It will get someone to talk to someone they would never otherwise talk to, right? And so, like, I've had the experience with all those like almost 2 decades of drinking that I did of like some of my best stories and experiences wouldn't have happened without alcohol, right? Where I like went up and like talked to that random stranger, and then like our groups of friends met and went and out and had this wild and crazy night. So like, I'm not going to talk about alcohol like it's some inherently bad thing. There's probably a time and place for a lot of people to drink, just like not me, not people like me anymore. But it does sort of, a room full of people who are drinking alcohol, like, especially now as someone who doesn't drink, when I walk into one of those rooms, it's pretty easy to see that, like you said, the level of connection is kind of superficial. It's like very surface level conversation. I think like when people are drunk, they want to talk a lot. They want to talk loud. They're also kind of talking over each other. They're thinking about what they're going to say next instead of actually listening. There's not a lot of empathy being exchanged in those conversations. And it just looks a certain type of way because alcohol is a numbing agent. It's a disconnector. So like it's incredibly effective in doing so, right? Like you get a little bit disconnected from yourself as you drink. You get disinhibited. And then you kind of open up in this like kind of unhinged way, which can be a lot of fun in some ways, right? But it's not, to your point, it's not super deep conversation or real connection that I think is most fulfilling for us, right? Like there's nothing more fulfilling than sitting with someone and truly connecting with them and talking about like the deep dark stuff or sharing some like shadowy corner of yourself with somebody and having them accept you and respond and relate to you. That's less common with people who are super like inebriated, right? And that is one of the things that I really love about the product that we have in New Brew, which is, you know, has a couple of different plant medicines in it, but also, you know, psilocybin. There are, you know, other plant medicines that can make you feel a little loose and like give you that little shift in consciousness, like a slightly altered state, yet you are in a very empathetic space, right? Where like you are really listening to people. You are more deeply dropped into yourself than you normally are. And you're like in a slightly more vulnerable state in a way. And that, yeah, it's, I don't even know. I won't call it better, but it's just different, right? I think it fulfills us in a different way.
Yeah. Definitely. All these thoughts are popping into my mind. Like if we were to poll people sitting in a bar, would they say like, yes, they feel more disconnected from their self, like inhibited versus uninhibited? I don't know. I feel like we have so many opinions, but what's really standing out to me is the listening piece. And I think it's a two-way street, like listening to others, but also being able to listen to self so that you can be in conversation a little bit better. And that's what I personally love about plant medicines, whether it's in a social situation or just with myself. It's like everything becomes more clear. And if it's more clear, then it's more real, and then it's more meaningful. Like there is such a wonderful cascade that happens there. So can we talk more about these plants? Like the ones that you've chosen for New Brew, or if you want to go into more like the psychedelics, because that's always a fun conversation too. But you've created a product with some really cool stuff in it that I've never seen in combination.
Yeah, definitely. I can give kind of the background on New Brew, or the short version at least. So it was, I think like 6 months or so after I had quit drinking, I had spent 6 months in just total abstinence. Like I wasn't drinking coffee. Like I was trying to, for that period of time, just find my absolute baseline, which I did and got really comfortable with, which I think is important. Again, everyone's recovery is different, right? But at least what worked for me was cutting everything out for a period of time and learning how to find peace in that like 100% sober, abstinent living, right? Mm-hmm. And in that period of time, sort of like towards the end of that, I got really curious about the non-alcoholic beverage market, because it was like, well, I've made this decision to leave alcohol behind for the rest of my life, yet I'm going to still be partaking in these social rituals where people are drinking, right? Like I'm not going to stop going to weddings or bars or birthday parties or whatever. And I got to have something in my hand. I got to be drinking something. So I started to look at like the, you know, CBD beverage market and just like the whole non-alc sector that had really popped up over the last five, maybe 10 years. And it was really big here in LA and in New York and some of the coastal cities, especially. And I was testing out all these different products and like, you know, I love non-alcoholic beer. First of all, like, because I miss the taste of beer, and those taste exactly like beer, and it's amazing. Like, I'm so glad that I got sober in a time where that exists. But a lot of this market is made up of so-called like functional beverages or mocktails. You know, they kind of, a lot of them come in a similar shape and size can as New Brew. And they'll have claims like mood boosting or relaxing or this or that. So I was buying a lot of these, right? And like testing them out. And I found out pretty quickly, like, this is a lot of bullshit. It's like a lot of marketing jargon and like a lot of placebo effect, which by the way, is like a real thing. If something says it's relaxing, you're going to be like, you're going to feel a little more relaxed. But I did like some real experimenting where I drink it in this scenario and then that scenario. And I started to get like very curious about it. I didn't find any drinks that made me feel any type of way when it came down to it. And, you know, I knew from not only myself, but a lot of like the people around me who were maybe not quitting drinking, but they were taking space from it. Like they were taking a day or a week or a month or sometimes a year off. I knew that there was this movement happening away from alcohol. And that's what this whole like beverage market was developing in response to, right? But I could tell that like, yeah, there are certain people who are in pursuit of total abstinence, right? For whom, like, they have such an addictive personality or, you know, such an issue that they shouldn't consume anything that alters their consciousness at all, or they're better off not doing that, right? But I think most people fit into this larger bucket where they're looking for better functional ingredients than alcohol, because alcohol is just hyper dysfunctional. Like, it can be really fun, but just as a drug, which is what it is, it's pretty destructive for like a very large percentage of people who consume it regularly. Like, it's a neurotoxin. It destroys pretty much every part of your body's operating system. It causes cancer. It fundamentally changes your behavior in the moment and over the long term. Like, it can alter your personality. It wrecks families. Like, there's, you know, right now I think the CDC just put out a report that like 500 people are dying every day from alcohol related causes. It has this massive economic impact on our country, and yet it's the only thing available in that ceremony of drinking that we all participate in, right? It's really kind of weird that it has this stranglehold over that core social ritual that's been a part of humans since human history began. So it's hyper normalized, right? We all think it's just like the only option. You're either like, when someone says, I'm going to go have a drink, we all know what kind of drink that is, right? That means alcohol. We're sharing a drink. That's an alcoholic drink. Yeah. So I started to think deeply about that and how like perverse and just weird that is, right? Like, there's so many other experiences to be had. There's so many other like feelings and cool psychoactive, especially plants that exist on this earth and have been here longer than us. And yet none of the ones that actually make you feel something have found their way into a ready-to-drink beverage. And so that's where the idea for New Brew kind of started.
I think we can all admit stress is a common factor that affects everyone in today's fast-paced world. And this leads to a lot of different health issues. But what if the answer to a better stress response was in a key nutrient? And it's one that most of us are missing. I am talking about magnesium. Actually, I'm specifically talking about Magnesium Breakthrough by Bioptimizers. This one-of-a-kind product is designed to reverse low levels of magnesium, which could be causing a multitude of other health problems. But what sets Magnesium Breakthrough apart is its ability to support healthy levels of the stress hormone, like cortisol, a better balanced stress response in your nervous and hormonal systems, and healthy production of GABA, the relaxing neurotransmitter. This leads to a more peaceful and better flow state. So this means that this supplement acts like a brake on your body's nervous system, helping to calm and soothe, promoting a better quality of life. But you have to get the right kinds of magnesium. The truth is, most magnesium supplements you find in the health store today only contain two cheap synthetic forms. And since they're not full spectrum, they actually won't even help your magnesium deficiency or do much to support your overall health. There are actually 7 key forms of magnesium, and you must get all of them if you want to experience its calming, stress-balancing effects. That's why we recommend Magnesium Breakthrough by Bioptimizers. It's the only organic, full-spectrum magnesium supplement that includes 7 unique forms of magnesium for stress resilience and better sleep, all in one bottle. How easy is that? So if you want to learn more about Magnesium Breakthrough, go ahead and head over to bioptimizers.com/biohackerbabes. I'll put that link in the show notes for today's episode as well. And if you're ready to try it out, make sure you use discount code biohackerbabes10 at checkout. And guess what? In addition to that discount, you also will get some sort of amazing gift from them. That's why we love shopping at Bioptimizers. They always throw something fun in for you every month. All right, so head over to bioptimizers.com/biohackerbabes and check out that magnesium.
And it was several months later that I was on vacation with my wife, and we stumbled into a kava bar, and we tried this mixture of kava root and kratom leaf, which are the same 2 plants that we use in New Brew. We tried it in like a coconut shell, and it's more traditional serving, and we were kind of blown away by it. Neither of us had tried either plant before, but we felt super open-hearted and like grounded, kind of tapped into ourselves and each other. We felt relaxed. We felt like very vivacious, but we didn't feel inebriated, We didn't feel like sloppy. We weren't impaired. Our judgment wasn't altered in any way. If anything, we were like more focused and more attentive than before. I was able to go get like a really good workout in right after. So I was like, okay, this is like, I'm getting the things that I think I was trying so hard to get out of alcohol, and that I'm like relaxed and I'm really open to the people around me. I'm very comfortable, but I'm not like sloppy. Like I can go about my day. I wasn't hungover at all afterwards. So yeah, it was a revelatory kind of mind-opening experience for me. And I realized right away, like I got to figure out how to get these plants into like a tasty beverage that people can buy it just at the liquor store, or, you know, grocery store in the US. And that's how it all started.
Awesome. We're so grateful for you and your yes. adventures. Yeah.
Yeah. Cause I, similar to you, I feel like I've tried all the alternatives from the local health food store, and sometimes I maybe feel something, but then I'm like, oh, it has 90 milligrams of caffeine. So maybe it's just the caffeine I'm feeling,
yeah.
you know, like, I don't
or
know.
So much sugar. So you run a little high and then you just crash.
Yes. Yeah, some of them have like 16 too. Grams of sugar in a little tiny can. And yeah, mm-hmm. so we're so grateful that you created this. I have a question for you about the combination. So I was just recently in Hawaii and I went to a kava bar, which I had been to. I've been to a kava bar in Hawaii years ago before I even knew about Kratom.
That's where I had about it for the first time too.
But this past time I was there, I had already been drinking. I've been drinking New Brew for about a year now. And I asked them, I said, oh, do you use Kratom in combination? And she said, no, she said, we're purists here. We just use kava. And she said, in Hawaii, if you want to get that, you have to go to like a smoke shop to get mm-hmm. it. So what are your thoughts on that? And I know there's some debate about, you know, the safety, the purity, the testing. Like, why do some people feel like that shouldn't be combined?
Yeah, I think that it's less that they shouldn't be combined, but I think just kratom in general as a plant carries a lot of stigma around with it, right? And so when you talk about people who, some people who run a kava bar, especially in the native countries of kava, like Fiji or Hawaii or Vanuatu, you know, Polynesia, they may be more like purists about it. Like, we serve kava, right? And kratom comes with a lot of controversy, and we can get into all of that. But kava, although it used to be controversial, like it 20 years ago, there's a lot of stigma around kava. Now, not so much. And it's also like been used in those cultures for thousands of years. And so it kind of makes sense that, you know, some people who operate a kava bar would just want to keep it to kava. Okay. It's also like kind of strange that kava and kratom are have found each other as plants from completely different parts of the world. Like kratom is native to Southeast Asia, Indonesia and Thailand and Vietnam, Malaysia. And kava, like I said, is more from island nations, Polynesia. So it's a bit peculiar that they've like found their way into the same setting, but most kava bars do serve both plants that I've been to, at least, because it's a beautiful combination. They somehow work super, super well together. Like the kratom gives you a little bit of like calm, balanced energy. It acts in small doses as a mild stimulant. The kratom tree is actually in the coffee family. So it's like a very close cousin of the coffee plant. And kava, meanwhile, is very relaxing. Like it's anti-anxiety and stress relieving. So yeah, they blend really well together. That answers your question.
Yeah, and I love them together because for me, kava, like I'll just fall asleep. I'm just like out. So the balance for me, it acts more almost like a cocktail, get that mental clarity, a little bit of energy. It feels great.
Yeah, definitely. Just to go into a little more about kratom, because I think that's the most talked about aspect of our beverage, certainly, and just sort of like a very heated debate that happens anytime the word is brought up, whether it's mm-hmm. on social media or in the mainstream media or even like with policymakers, lawmakers, and activists that are pro or anti kratom, it's rarely it rarely allows for middle ground or nuance. It's a very polarized debate. So I'll just speak to that. Kratom, like I said, it's this plant that's been around for forever. It's native to Southeast Asia. It's been used there pretty much safely for thousands of years. It's traditionally brewed into a tea. So, you know, people will pick the leaves of this evergreen kratom tree and brew it into a tea, usually in the morning, and drink it throughout the day. And it acts primarily as like a productivity tool. You know, it can be consumed to give you like that sort of mild, calm energy. I'd say compared to coffee, it's less jittery. Like coffee will get you really amped up, and caffeine, it'll get in, you know, especially in higher doses, you get really amped up and sometimes a little shaky or trembly. And that's like one way to get energy, right? Kratom, I think it more balances you out. So it's a more subtle energy. And I think it's a little bit more of like a flow state energy, right? Where you're able to focus more because you're calm rather than being amped up. So that's why people in those countries have been consuming it for so long, because it's amazing to get work done like throughout the day. And it also happens to like put you in a pretty good mood in the process. Kratom kind of made its way over to the US post-Vietnam. I think it was like a veterans that brought it over initially, and it sort of kind of worked its way and not really into mainstream society. That's now happening today, but it sort of like existed in the underground, and really its landing spot in the US was smoke shops, to your point earlier. You know, we sort of Americanized it, right? Like we're like, oh, it's this plant. Let's sell it like next to bath salts at smoke shops, which is like, unfortunately, where it landed. We're like, we'll just make it as high dose as possible, stuff it into capsules and sell it at head shops, right? That was our response to this like amazing plant that Mother Earth presented us with, right? It's developed this sort of like odd reputation in our country as a smoke shop thing. It's like, oh, isn't that thing that's like sold next to the, you know, Bob Marley posters and bongs like down at the head shop? And that's sort of how it's been understood. And all the other important thing to note is that I've mentioned the sort of low serving size use case of kratom. In really high servings or doses, it has a very different effect. So if you take, let's say like 10 new brews worth of kratom at once or more, which is what a lot of most kratom products look like that you find at a smoke shop or even a gas station, you get more of a sedative kind of analgesic type effect. That's it somewhat mimics like a painkiller or an opioid. So because our country has been amidst this opioid crisis for quite a long time now, a lot of people have sought out kratom as a natural alternative or a means of getting off of heroin or Oxycontin or, you know, forms of synthetic opioids. And kratom has saved millions of lives in the process by helping people wean off of those medications. It's also helped a lot of people avoid having to go into a clinic and get on methadone or Suboxone, right? Which are also just really potent opioids. So it's this natural medicinal alternative to those. And of course, for the folks who are trying to get off of something like Oxycontin and their system is used to being flooded with synthetic opioids all day, every day, when they reach for kratom, they're going to take really, really high doses of it. To try to like match that effect. So a lot of those people will become addicted to kratom, because it's very much possible to get addicted to kratom. Like anything else that feels really good, you can build a habit with it, right? And in particular, if you're transferring your addiction from one thing to another, you're going to be addicted to that thing. So that's how kratom is best known in the US, is this kind of like, well, that's that like opioid like thing at the smoke shop, right? Which ignores It's an entire other use case of the plant. It ignores its cultural history. It even ignores a lot of the science and the clinical data around it. So a big part of what we're doing as a brand and as a company is going out and educating people and helping people understand the plant and, like, including the risks, by the way, because it's not like it's completely risk-free. Like, we want people to know this is 21 and up. No kids should drink this. You can build a habit with it. It's totally possible. So don't drink it every single day. Don't drink like 10 of them in a day. Like, have one or two, right? You know, the same way that you would with anything else that's psychoactive. Like, you want to be consuming it really mindfully.
Yeah. Thank you for sharing that. I have met several people through my microdosing work that transferred their opioid addiction into kratom addiction. And then they were like, let's try psilocybin to get off of that. And it is really interesting. As you mentioned, it's like, if we're ignoring kind of the root issue, even the most native and pure plants can still be abused. Same with psilocybin, really any of those plants. What about the particular strains or colors that maybe if people start kind of searching the internet for, you know, on Reddit, it's just like an explosion of like, this color is bad, this color is good. And people are just really kind of going at each other about it.
Yeah. Yeah. I wouldn't call myself an expert when it comes to kratom strains. They're broken into generally three groups. Like, there's white, green, and red. I think that it's mostly a marketing thing. Like, the reality is those are all coming from the same tree. Those leaves are coming from the same tree. The white, green, and red are, those are developed depending on how you oxidate, how long you dry the leaves, basically. It'll produce like a slightly different looking and tasting version of the plant, if you will. Again, I'm not an expert, but I learned early on that that was kind of like the kratom industry's attempt at helping people make sense of it. Like, okay, this is like sativa and indica, right? So people know, like, this one makes me sleepy and this one gives me energy. I've tried all three colors and never felt a huge difference myself. When it comes to New Brew, we use an extract of kratom leaf. So it's kind of irrelevant, right? Like, we're pulling out a full spectrum extract that mimics the alkaloid composition that's found in the actual plant. But it's completely agnostic to the whole like white, red, or green thing.
Interesting.
Since I discovered like kratom extracts like very early on in this journey, for me personally, and this is just for me, like, I really prefer extracts. A lot of the use of kratom out there is capsules that you know, contain raw pulverized plant matter. Like, the actual plant is ground up and put into capsules. For me, like, that's really hard on my digestive tract. Like, consuming that much plant matter, it's also not how kratom is traditionally used, right? It's brewed into a tea. That's an American thing, as I understand it. Like, just drinking a lot of powder or capsules, but a lot of people love it. To me, extracts are just superior. Like, the feeling of it, it's a lot cleaner in the system. It's more bioavailable. So it's easier for you to digest and feel the effects of it. And it's more reliable in terms of dosing. Like, there's a huge variance from batch to batch when you're talking about like a raw plant versus an extract, where we can lab test it and, you know, measure the dose really carefully.
That's great. And your dosing is, I believe, like on the lighter side, correct? I remember the first time I did, I'm really struggling to pronounce it correctly. We talked about this before we started recording. I've always called it kratom. And we talked about how that sounds kind of scary. You're calling it kratom.
Yeah.
You also said the correct pronunciation. I feel like we got to set the record straight before I can go further. Is kratom.
Kratom, yeah, or something closer to that. I feel like even kratom is probably slightly wrong. I mean, it's not an English word, right? Like, this is,
We're not gonna get it right.
And I think it's said slightly differently in Vietnam versus Malaysia, for example, or Thailand. But it's something closer to kratom. And if you say it with an accent, it sounds even better. But, like, honestly, I've settled, a lot of people say kratom. I say kratom because I think kratom sounds crazy. It's like kratom. Like, it's the most American take on that word.
Like, animated character that's going to kill you in your sleep.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. The Kratom, the evil Kratom. Kratom is kind of in the middle. I don't say like Kratom because I feel like it's like when imposter. You say like Ibiza, like with a lisp, you know, when people come back from Spain, like
it's kind of
cringy. And it's like, maybe just say Ibiza because you're a white guy. So
that's I lived in Barcelona for a while and I couldn't get the lisp. I was like, I'm American.
Yeah.
I appreciate that.
Exactly. Yeah, so I'm like, we're getting it wrong, but like, let's get it just slightly less wrong is how I feel about Kratom. It's good middle ground. But yeah, it's a good question.
Kratom. Yeah. Okay. So the first time I tried Kratom, I feel like I got to practice saying this. The first time I tried it, I did a little shot. I have no idea what the sourcing was. Someone handed it to me. It knocked me on my ass. Completely knocked me out. And everyone else in the room was flying high. They were like euphoric and had so much energy. And that's been my experience with some things where my bio individual response is just polar opposite to what other people in my circle are experiencing. But I'll say that was not a good introduction for me. It was so strong. But my experience with Nubru is, I'm not afraid of it at all. It's such an easy, smooth. And of course we have a drink. So it's like a little bit more measurable, but talk to us about the dosing and what people could expect to feel.
Yeah. So we formulated Nubru to have basically the lowest threshold servings of each plant, like the least amount that you can still actually feel. That was very intentional for a few reasons. I think for one, that's how I like to consume anything. I think like even when it comes to psilocybin, I like to microdose. There's every once in a while with a psychedelic, it's good to go very deep and do a journey. Like I'm preparing for one right now, actually. But generally speaking, I think like microdosing is the way to go with just about everything. Even alcohol, by the way, which is something I wasn't able to pull off myself, but that is the way to do it. So yeah, you know, we also are conscious of the fact that most Americans have never tried either of these plants, as much as it can feel otherwise, because we like operate within these circles of people who are familiar with it. Like most people have no idea what the hell Kratom is or kava. And if they find our product at a liquor store, a grocery store, convenience store, whatever, and they get curious about it and they learn about it and they want to try it, like we don't want them to have an overwhelming experience. And to your point, like everyone does react to it a little bit differently. I haven't heard of anyone having like one can of Nubru and having like a really negative, like overpowering experience. But we have people who tell us like, I really feel the kava and I'll actually drink this like close to bedtime. And which is really strange to me because there's actually a little caffeine in it too. It has a tea base. Like the base of it is like an organic tea. But yeah, for some people, they're not caffeine sensitive. They don't really feel the kratom quite as much and they feel the kava and they use it as this like relaxing happy hour or even like nighttime drink. Then we have other people who are like, I used to take Adderall and I just use Nubru now because it gets me laser focused in during the workday. Or people who replace their pre-workout drink that they normally drink with Nubru because they feel energized by it. So yeah, I mean, we see things across this whole spectrum. It's the same set of effects, right? But people feel them to different degrees, depending on their set and setting, I guess, right? Like with any psychedelic, like what's in your system? What are your preconceived notions about what you're consuming? Like the sort of placebo aspect of it. Yeah, like there's so much that goes into it that we're bringing to the table as the person consuming something.
Mm-hmm. I love there's so many different applications and it's almost permission to kind of experiment and figure out what works for you. Like I discovered my sweet spot because when I first saw the caffeine, I was like, oh my God, what am I going to drink? This is going to make you sleepy. We'll be able to sleep. And you recommended kind of doing it in the afternoon. So now it's like while I'm making dinner or transitioning from workday to evening. And like, that's when I feel the best on it. It's like such a perfect transition where it does wind me down, but it's enough time to metabolize the caffeine. Is that when you're doing it, Renee?
Yeah. 4 o'clock seems to be like my favorite time to drink it, but I have drank it as late as like 6, 7 PM and it didn't impact my sleep. And I feel like I'm sensitive to caffeine. Like if I have coffee after 1:30, my sleep is done. Like it's mm-hmm. done. But this I've had, like I said, as late as 7. And for some reason, it doesn't keep me up. And I know everyone's different. And actually, I have a Kava Kratom bar like a mile down the road. And I went a couple weeks ago. I got a blended drink and they had 3 types of Kratom. And I said, well, what's the difference? And of course, she said, you know, this one's energizing, this one is neutral, and this one is sleepy. And I said, I'll do the neutral. And I said, and it was what time? It was maybe 5 or 6 p.m. And I said, this definitely won't keep me up, right? She was like, oh, no, no, no. She was like, I drink that one like before bed. It definitely won't keep you up. I was awake till 2 a.m.
No.
Oh, wow.
So clearly I have
trust
a very-
anybody.
Yeah, I was like, I clearly had a very different reaction than she does. But circling back to New Brew, I've never felt that it interrupted my sleep.
Yeah. Yeah, it's pretty mellow. Even the caffeine aspect, it's 30 milligrams, which is like a green tea or, you know, it's like a quarter of a cup of coffee for context, which is a very small serving. It's like enough to like give a little bit of a kick, right? But it's not going to last in your system the same way a full coffee would. So I'm the same way, like as you, Renee. I definitely can have a New Brew like late in the evening and it won't affect my sleep at all. But yeah, it is different for everyone. And you know, the other reason that we use such small servings is we want people to be able to have more than one in one sitting. Like if you go to some kind of party or other function of some sort, like you don't want to be like nursing one drink the entire night and it gets warm and whatever, right? Like yeah. You want to be able to have more than one. So I feel like that's the way to go. It's just small servings. It also tastes really good. So you kind of want to have more than one anyway.
I haven't done more than one yet. Once I haven't feel either. So good.
Yeah, don't then. Honestly, it's if you get where you want to go with one, then stick with it. And I think that's for most people.
Okay.
Like there's some people who are like have a lot of experience with these plants, or they're just like, you know, really like I've met like really big dudes who are like bodybuilders who will have one New Brew and they're like, I don't feel it. And like, all right, you're a toucan person, but it. If you get where you want to be with one, then just like drink water and maybe you have one later, but it's not like alcohol where like one drink kind of begets the next. Right. And you just like, it's diminishing returns with Kratom and Kava. You're not going to just like feel better and better. Every one you have, like, I think maybe you have two, if that works for you. And then you just kind of chill, like you enjoy the feeling that you're having. And that's something I really love about New Brew, because with alcohol, I was always thinking about like the next one, right? Or like getting a little more messed up, right?
You kind of chase.
It's just not that way.
You chase that feeling with alcohol. One turns to two, turns to three, like very quickly. Yeah.
Totally. Yeah. Definitely for me. Yeah.
As you mentioned earlier, you can listen to your body's own communication a little bit better. So it makes sense that it sounds like we're all minimum effective dose people here, but it's like, you don't need it because you're like, no, good. Chill.
That's exactly right. Yeah. You're aware of what's going on in your body. Like you're not numbed out and your judgment isn't totally thrown for a loop. Right. So you're kind of like, all right. I know exactly how I'm feeling. I don't really need to feel more of that. And I can just like hang out and talk to people, which is nice.
Yeah.
It's very liberating.
Yeah.
A great solution.
Yeah.
So Justin, as we start to wrap up, tell us about accessibility. I know you're starting to release into grocery stores. We're like, how can people find this? I know certain cities, but what's on the horizon too?
If you're in the LA area, Southern California, or Austin, Texas, or Miami, then you're in luck because New Brew's everywhere. We have a store locator on our website, which is drinknewbrew.com, and you can see if there's a store near you. We are also in stores all over the country. They're just kind of scattered, but those three markets that I mentioned are the ones where we have like a bigger presence, and it's very easy to find. And for anyone around the country, you can just buy it on our website too. Drinknewbrew.com. We have all three of our flavors, mango, citrus, and berry on there, and it'll just show up at your doorstep. So that's the easiest way for most people.
Yeah.
Nice. I'm in Austin right now. I'm like, okay, I need to look at the store locator. I'm like, where?
Yeah. You can't be far from a new brew store right now. Trust me.
It's nice.
Yeah. We just got down there in December and it's like been like wildfire, honestly. Like we can't keep it on the shelves there. Most stores. Oh, so.
It's a good place for it. Very good place.
Yeah,
for
it is. Definitely. Yeah.
That's awesome. Nice. Yeah. Well, I just get it shipped to my door. Actually, just I finally switched over to the subscription, so I don't have to think about it. It just shows up.
Oh, nice. Cool.
Really easy.
That's the way to do it. Yeah. I'm surrounded by like free new brew 24/7. So it's a healthy exercise for me in restraint, right? Like, and it, especially as someone who's out, like, you know, promoting and selling this beverage, like, I'm very mindful about like maintaining a really healthy relationship with it myself. And when there's like a full fridge of cold new brew at all times with all three flavors, like it's a real test, which has been awesome. So far, like, I feel like I've found a really good balance with it where, and this is like something I definitely want to leave people with who are like curious about trying new brew potentially. Yeah, don't drink it every single day. Like I would say that's true of almost any psychoactive substance. Even though it's really mild and mellow and it, like when you try it, you'll be like, oh, this is whatever. You know, take days off, remind your body of what it's like to live a day without it. Like I think that's true of coffee too. Like you don't want to convince your body that it's dependent on anything. So, maintain awareness around the way you consume new brew. Don't drink it every day. Don't drink it like you're like chugging beer. It's just a different type of thing, right? Mm-hmm. So just like sip slowly, enjoy it, find use for it. Like it can really help you live a better quality of life, I think. Like it can help you get things done. It can help you feel relaxed going into social settings without having to drink alcohol, which is a huge, powerful tool for a lot of people. But it's not entirely without risk. So like, don't build a habit with it unnecessarily.
Yeah. I love that you have that on the can, on the box, on the website. And every time I see that, I think, can you imagine if you had that kind of a label on coffee or alcohol, right? Like mm-hmm. you said with coffee, like same thing, like you shouldn't be drinking any of this stuff every day, but you would never see that on a bottle of wine. Please do not consume every day, right? You know, so you're being like yeah. very responsible with this. So
definitely.
They don't care We're about trying. You. They just want to make more money.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, that's a whole nother episode we could do. I'm sure the financial backings of the alcohol industry, but.
Oh yeah. They're indeed for sure. But yeah, that's this whole thing is like new brew. That is kind of like an exercise in us trying to set a new standard. Which is self-imposed. Like these are not the disclosures on our can, and the fact that it's 21 plus is not legally enforceable in a lot of the country. It's decisions that we've made that we think are going to set the right path for these plants to land in the right place in our society, because they deserve to be accessible to people and not restricted or banned. They just need to be regulated. Common sense regulations, which is happening in a lot of states, which is really positive. And we're pushing for it in California where we live. But not only to do that for Kratom and for Kava, but to try to like set an example of how a psychoactive substance of some sort can be responsibly marketed and sold. Like there aren't really good examples of that. And especially as the psychedelic renaissance takes hold around our country, and we're going to see psilocybin become legalized, hopefully, and other substances too. Like, yeah, we want to show people how it's done, and there's no playbook for it that we really like. So we're just kind of doing it on our own. And that means educating, being hyper transparent about what's in our beverage, like truly proactively pushing people to learn about it before they just try it. It's not like everyone should just go have a new brew. I would never say that. Like go to our website, check out the learning center on our website, do your own research, whatever, and then figure out if it's right for you. We don't want this to be like alcohol where it's, you know, you grow up and you just know you're going to have your first beer one day. But in reality, that's not a good idea for everyone, right? Like everyone should learn.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you.
We're very appreciative. Yeah.
So speaking of that, drinknewbrew.com. We'll put that in the show notes so people can learn more. And then Instagram, drinknewbrew as well. And Justin, to close out the episode, can you leave our audience with one final piece of advice, something they should do to optimize their health? And it can be related to everything we just talked about or totally separate. Anything you want to share?
Yeah. I guess one thing that was missing from my whole story about like how I got sober and my journey away from alcohol, I did transfer my addiction, if you want to call it that, to alcohol. I didn't transfer it to another substance. I transferred it to exercise. And like, above all, like, just as a human being, that's what I know I can consciously recommend to anyone. Like, if you're struggling with your mental health or with, substance abuse, find a way to put that energy you're using in that way into exercise, because I think it's universal. I think it's true for everyone. Like, that has created the biggest shift in my life by far. It's helped me feel, good when I wake up in the morning, when I go to bed at night. It helps me stay on track. It helps every single aspect of being. So I know that's kind of generic, but like, yeah, work out, exercise, or like dance, do whatever, do yoga. Like, doesn't matter what it is, but move your body. It's the most healing thing that I think any of us can do.
Thank you for sharing that. No, I think it's so powerful. It's not over. I mean, people don't do it enough, right? So even if it seems simple, it's like we have to keep saying it.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Yeah. It's the best, maybe the best mood booster, and just so much crossover with plant medicines and exercise, like what's actually happening in the brain. It makes so much sense that we should start there and commit to it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, thank you so much for sharing your story and your wisdom with us today. It's such an incredible leader, and just there's so much hope and so much inspiration in what you're doing. So thank you.
Thank you both so much for having me on. I'm glad that we're building this friendship now too. I'm excited to keep in touch with both of you. And yeah, I appreciate your support with Nubru, and also just your positivity and your energy. And I'm very excited to be connected with you guys.
Likewise. Same. Absolutely.
Thank you.
Much more to come. Yes. So we'll share more resources in the show notes so everyone can learn, continue their education around Nubru. And thank you. Thank you so much for today.
Thank you.
And thanks to everyone that tuned in. We will see you next time.
Love this episode of the Biohacker Babes podcast? Head over to Apple Podcasts to subscribe, rate, and leave a review. We truly appreciate your support.
Until then, happy biohacking.
This podcast offers health, fitness, and nutritional information and is designed for educational purposes only. You should not rely on this information as a substitute for, nor does it replace professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. If you have any concerns or questions about your health, you should always consult with a physician or other healthcare professional.